Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. Doesn't matter when I read it or what I'm doing or when I finish it or anything like that. I just finish the book, do a review, put it up on the podcast feed for you guys to listen to, or you guys and girls to listen to. So the book that I'm going to be reviewing today is actually quite a long book, probably the longest book that I've read and reviewed for the show so far in this past year. But I don't think I've got a whole lot to say about it as such, because, well, I'll get onto that in a minute. So instead of just going long with that, and because people seem to quite like these longer episodes that I'm doing, I'll just do a bit of quick bit of listener feedback, because I'm working on a cruise ship at the moment. I've not had internet access for a while. So, and when I did, in the Azores and in the Middle Atlantic, I'm on a cruise ship from Portugal to Florida at the moment. So the last time I checked my emails, didn't really have a lot of time to reply to them, to the feedback. So I thought, well, I'll just reply here as part of the podcast. First up, bit of feedback from Tom from Sydney in Australia. He writes, I just started listening to your podcast, beginning with the Contact review. I too loved the film, but got bored with the book less than halfway through. I find your review style really interesting and fun to listen to, so keep up the great work. I'm going to listen to your Dune review next. Oh, which is pretty cool. Thanks for that nice little bit of praise. But he goes on to say, if you're looking for book suggestions, and I always am looking for book suggestions, by the way, I can suggest Perdido Street Station by China Meville. It's sort of bordering between sci-fi and steampunk fantasy, but it's an excellent, I like this, but it's an excellent and widely acclaimed book, so I think you might like it. That's if you haven't read it already. Look forward to good reviews in the future. No, I haven't actually read that book. I don't think I recognise the name of the book. I definitely recognise the name of the author. I think I've probably read a book or two by that author before. But I do know that I'm getting quite a few suggestions from other people about China Meville. And it actually happens that I was in the bookshop around the corner from where I live, another country bookshop, which is a fantastic second-hand kind of charging, sort of free, like fee-charging library kind of thing that they have there in Berlin. And I was there and I was looking through it and I saw, China Meville, or however you pronounce that name. But the book was absolutely massive, a huge chunky book. And because the book I'm reading, or that I'm going to review now, is actually a big chunky book, and I was flying and travelling, I didn't want to take too many big chunky books with me, so I left that one and picked up a different one instead. Talking of big chunky books, when is the Kindle going to come out in Europe, or we can actually, you know, use it outside of the US? Because I could buy one from America, but I looked into it and I'd have to have a credit card with an address in the United States, and then I wouldn't be able to use the wireless function outside of the United States, and I don't go to the United States very often, and I'd only be able to transfer books from my laptop. So I really, really want a Kindle, but they're just not happening. Actually, I was doing some research, looking into it yet again to see if it's ever going to come out, or the Kindle 2 is going to work in Europe or anything like that. My girlfriend looked over my shoulder and said, oh, I was going to buy you one of those for your birthday or for Christmas, but they don't work outside of the US. It turns out she knows a lot more about the Kindles because of that, because of doing her own research about it. Anyway, Kindles, I want one. Because also, if I did have one, I'd be able to like download more books off the internet, not just cheaply from Amazon, but also the free ones, and so review some of the short stories and other things that go online. But I'm never going to read that kind of stuff when I have to look on a computer screen. Anyway, moving on. Thanks for the suggestion there, Tom from Sydney. Moving on. Next bit of listener feedback. This is actually a cool bit of feedback because it was entered on the SFBRP wiki page, where every episode that I put up gets its own wiki page there, and anyone can go along there and make comments about it or make other suggestions or do anything like that. And this is one that James, I don't know where James is from, but he posted on there. And he had quite a bit to say about my last review of Snow Crash by Neal Stephenson. If you've not read that, it's my longest review yet and one of my most scathing reviews. And he goes, it's quite a long bit of feedback, so I'll go through some point by point. He goes, hey Luke, certainly one of your longer podcasts, but hey, I like the longer format, so no problem there. Which is good, because I probably stick to the sort of like, go as long as I want to, go as long as it takes kind of length format of the podcast. He continues, I think that a lot of your points are really sound. This is about the book review of Snow Crash, he goes. But it might be worth reading some William Gibson cyberpunk novels for some context. For many people, the novels were about the concept above and beyond character and plot. I don't think that is really an exception. In comparison to hard science fiction, the sort of sleek and well-crafted novels that you and I like, it is like comparing high literature to a Ludlum thriller. One is art, the other is entertainment. So just as a little bit of response to this, you know, I guess I'll jump in here. As it happens, the next book that I'm going to read and review is Neuromancer by William Gibson. And because I was, reading Snowcrash and thinking, I'm quite sure, 10 years ago when I read some cyberpunk books, I really enjoyed them. And I did read Neuromancer as well. And I remember really liking it, like I say, 10... No, probably more than that, maybe 13, 14, 15 years ago when I read it. I'm going to read back over Neuromancer. And I actually did pick this up from the bookshop before I got this bit of feedback there. So we're obviously thinking on the main... on the same page here. And my main reply to the concept, the idea that the concept is above and beyond the character and plot, it's like, yeah, fine, that's fair enough. Neal Stephenson, if he'd written an essay about his views on the future of online activity, I probably really enjoyed it, and if he'd written a separate essay on, like, extreme anarcho-capitalistic societies in the future and things like that, I'd have probably enjoyed reading that too, because I like reading that kind of stuff. The thing is, putting them together, just shoving them together and putting them into a book, it doesn't make a good novel. And I'm here to review novels. I'm not here to review ideas in novels or technological ideas or societal ideas in novels, although they can add to a book. And of course, they do add to a book, and a good book will have those, That's not what it's there for, A book has to be, first and foremost, a pleasure to read. It has to be enjoyable. That's how I rate the books. I don't rate them on the strength of ideas. I rate them on how much I enjoy reading the book. The thing is, in Snow Crash, the writing was just really, really bad. Not just the plot and the characters were really bad, but the writing as well. So actually reading the words on the page, how they were presented, was just hard. It was like, literally, it was like a clunk, clunk, clunk. The passages of the librarian. I know I really went on about it in the last episodes. I don't want to go over it again here, but it's like, there wasn't any attempt to make it any kind of literature at all, to make it any kind of, there was nothing there. It was just sort of like a lecture with random heckles thrown in by a hero protagonist. And it was just pure dialogue for pages and pages and pages without any words that weren't said by one of the two characters there. Like I say, clunk, clunk, clunk. Also, about the art versus entertainment, or is it art or is it entertainment, that kind of thing. When it comes to reading, I don't want to ever feel the difference. I want to be entertained by art, and if something's purely entertaining, I want it to be so entertaining I forget it's art. I want it to just be a smooth transition there when I'm reading novels. And also, I'm not going to go into that whole debate here. If you're interested in my views on art versus entertainer, from the point of view as a professional artist and entertainer, you can listen to my other podcast, The Juggling Podcast, that I do, episode 49. I talk for about 50 minutes there, exactly on that subject, about what is art and what can be classed as art and entertainment. Anyway, get back to James's feedback here. Skip forward a bit. Okay, yeah, he says, in defense of the author... 2 points are worth mentioning. Okay, if you've got to defend an author, that's fair enough. You can defend the author. I'm not interested about you defending the author about how his other books are this and how his, contemporary fiction is good, historical fiction. These are some points that I'm not going to go into in detail there. I don't care about defending the author. Remember my review of Contact. It was mentioned by this other guy, Tom from Sydney there. I loved Carl Sagan's non-fictions books. I recently read, last year, I read the book The Dragons Out of Eden, and it was a riveting read, popular science kind of book talking about evolution of the brain and evolution of humans and stuff like that. It was fantastic, and I judged that book by the context of the book, the contents, the exact opposite of the context of the book. The contents of the book is how I judge it, not by, the other work of the author. It brings to mind, actually, just last night I was up on in the cinema, in the open air cinema here on the cruise ship, and it was the Indiana Jones film, the latest one. I was thinking, oh, that's great, because I really like the other ones, and I was it was actually a bit of a bad experience that I got about 25 minutes in, and I just gave up. Life is short. I don't need to inflict these unpleasurable experiences on me like the latest Indiana Jones film and the book Snow Crash. I say, other Indiana Jones films are fantastic, really, really great films. This one isn't, and I judge it by the context of this one, or the contents of this one. Keep getting these words mixed up. Anyway, he goes on to say, another great point here, he goes, It says, point number two, show me 5 books that deal well with the internet, and I will salute you. From my own experience in the creative exploration of the subject, it's phenomenally hard to do well. And yes, I do agree with that in a part, actually, because, you know, 5 books that deal well with the internet, it is hard, but 5 books that deal with the internet well as it is now. And that's the key to it. You know, this book, Snow Crash, isn't about the internet. It's about a network of some kind, but it isn't the internet, because the internet is changing all the time. You know, the technology is changing all the time, the culture is changing all the time. It is just not static. The internet, I guess, was once part of, like, what was it, US military program, and then someone invented email, and they could send stuff around there, and then HTTP, and sending files out, oh no, Usenet, and ICQ, and bulletin boards, and then, you know, then the World Wide Web was created. And these days, you know, it's just gone so far beyond that. You've got, like, all your mashups and your gubbins, and you've got Skype, and you've got layers of Java, and this and that, and this and that going on top, and World of Warcraft. And now even actually the normal telephone calls are routed over the internet as VoIP, you know, the voice over IP protocol. You know, so you can't say the internet is one thing. The internet is many, many, many elements together, and they're those elements separately as well, but more or less at the same time. I don't even know what I'm trying to say here, but the thing is, for a science fiction author to write an in-depth, you know, book about how the internet is now, or even about how he thinks is going to be in a few, you know, years into the future, it's just asking for trouble. You know, you can't do that. I once read this book that was, well, I didn't read it, I got about 20 pages into it. It was written in 1995, and it was about, I think it was about, because again, I only got a few pages into it, about, like, this murder victims that were being tracked, like, stalked on the internet by, you know, the killer was using the internet to track and stalk his you know, his killers. And then, of course, I guess later on in the book, the police would also use the internet to find the killer as well. And like I say, got about 20 pages in, because it was saying this. She sat down at her desk. She turned on her screen. She turned on her computer. The screen flashed once and beeped. She loaded up this program. She then plugged her telephone cable into it. She dialed this number. There was a screeching noise as the modem dialed this. It was literally step by step, like moment by moment, every single thing that was happening to actually connect to the internet was explained there. But not in a good way, if you understand that. It was like in a really bad way, because I tried reading this book maybe 5 years later, and it was already painfully out of date, and what they were talking about was painfully commonplace. And then also the actual contents of the book, like whole pages would be written out in like an ICQ chat room format as well. You know, you'd have to read sort of emails between each other, and that is also very painful to do. Although one book, which there is a few books, listen to my review that I did of Learning the World by, I can't remember the name of the artist now, Alistair MacLean, I think it was. Alistair something. And his is very much a book about, you know, someone making a blog. Although it's not a blog, it's not like the internet, but blogging and sharing views and things like that is mentioned quite a lot. Oh, another book, of course, Ender's Game. There's like the data sphere or the dataverse or whatever it's called in there. And that's all about posting essays. And then other people comment on those essays, and then other people comment on the comments, and other people comment. And if you become a good commenter, then you don't just become a commenter, you become an essayer as well. And it's, you know, Ender's brother and sister, they use this to become two of the most powerful voices, like the most influential voices in the world, and they're just kids at the time. And this, I really like it because it sort of predates the blogosphere by loads. When's like Ender's Game written? Like late 80s or something? Early 80s? Mid 80s? I can't remember. Like 84 or something? I don't even know. And that's way before that. But the concept is there. You know, the whole idea that, you know, people share ideas and they read the commentary and they post as much as they read. They contribute as much as they read and things like that. And they become famous. Some people become famous to small groups. Some people become famous across the whole world through the internet. And that's exactly what I'm doing now with this podcast, and that's exactly what you are doing by responding to me doing this podcast. You know, Ender's Game, Orson Scott Card had the concept, the base concept right there, that it's all about the sharing ideas of ideas and the sharing of the concepts and people actually using it to communicate, using it to grow communities and things. And that's what was really there in Ender's Game. And while you can sort of see it in Snow Crash, it's just like the main point of the metaverse in Snow Crash is for virtual motorbike racing and sword fighting, and, you know, it was meant to be a place of action, not a place of the exchange and the debating of ideas. And I think that's pretty much where he misses it completely. He just misses it totally as well. But I want to get more into this, because I think later on in this podcast, when I get onto the review of Peter F. Hamilton's book that I'm going to review now, I can actually go into this more in detail and more of these ideas. And then he said, James, wow, we're actually going along. I think this is just going to be a separate episode, like a feedback episode, and I'll just do the review of Peter Hamilton's book in the next episode. I think that's what I'll do. Didn't realise it was going to go on this long. Anyway, he said, as an aside, you mentioned that the metaverse in the book was like Second Life. Well, it's the other way around. Second Life was patterned after the metaverse. Well, my point was, when I said it was like Second Life, yeah, sure, I can see that, you know, the Second Life is patterned after the metaverse, but my point was that in the world of Snow Crash, there's nothing but Second Life. The internet as we know it now doesn't exist. You know, the easy, free exchange of information, which is the internet now, doesn't exist. So, like, in Second Life, you know, you want to exchange, and I say the metaverse as well, because I guess it's the same kind of thing. You want to give someone some information, but you don't have that information yet, so you've got to go find it. So you've got to, like, load yourself up, get your avatar ready, go out of your house in the metaverse or in Second Life. You've got to walk around. It takes you time to actually walk somewhere. When you walk somewhere, then you can go into the library. Then you've got to find someone in the library to find it. Once you actually get your information, which has already taken ages, then you've got to walk down the street or take the bus down the street, and then you've got to go into a club and see if your friend is in the club, and then you've got to find your friend in the club, and then once you've gone to them, you give them a card, but then they can't look at the information directly. Then they've got to take it back to their own home with their own avatar, back to their own place on the metaverse or in Second Life, and only when they're there then they can open it up, and then they can talk to the librarian, which is, it's just like, why, let's just send them an email. Why do we have to go through all of this kind of thing? And that's what Snow Crash just completely missed the point with, that there wasn't this. It was like a line of information. You go to this step, then that next step, then that next step, then that next step, then that next step. Whereas the internet, because it's all free and it's like a real network, unlike Second Life, which isn't a network, it's a place, and unlike the metaverse, which is a place, to do things in a place takes a lot of hard work. To do things on a network where you just connect from one node to the next, maybe with one other node in the way, like, I want some information, I'm here, I go through Google to get my information. That's it. Those are the steps that I need. Or if I know where the information is, I go from me to the information. So my point was, fair enough. Second Life is very influential. The metaverse is very influential on Second Life. But the thing is, Second Life is not influential in the slightest in the real world, whereas the internet is. And that was my point, that, sure, he predicted something, but he completely missed the point. Which isn't bad. I mean, I'm not saying that's a bad thing, because I've read so many science fiction books where the point was completely missed when it comes to the internet. You know, the internet wasn't predicted, or it's just predicted but got completely wrong. The thing is, the book didn't rely 100% on that concept and how strong that concept was to be a good book. It relied on other things as well. Anyway, yeah, so finally, wrapping up this last bit of feedback, he goes, otherwise a fun little podcast there. I was smiling when you waxed incentive at the book, though. I wonder if there's a blooper reel that we should be made aware of lurking somewhere in your computer. No, there's actually no blooper reel, because I don't actually edit these podcasts. I pretty much hit record, I start talking, and then I stop talking, and then I hit stop, and then I stick the music on the front and export as an MP3. I compress it as well, and then export as an MP3. And that's it. Sometimes, though, I do actually, you know, get about a minute in, and I sort of lose my flow, and I'm just not feeling it, or I, you know, just mess up something completely straight away. And then I'll take a second take. But once I'm past the intro, I normally just go with it, just go with the flow and do it. So thanks a lot, James, for the feedback, and thanks a lot for everyone else's feedback. I guess this is going to be a little mini feedback show. I probably won't be numbered. It'll just be here as a bit of feedback to the Snow Crash episode there. Keep sending in your feedback, and I'll see you in a few minutes, I guess, for me, when I review Peter F. Hamilton and The Dreaming Void. So, see you then.